Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. And we welcome back Dr. Shelley James. Dr. Shelley James is an international expert on light and well-being, TEDx and keynote speaker, author, well advisor, and visiting lecturer at the Royal College of Art. She's also a trained glass artist and electrician. I forgot about the electrician, Greg. I forgot about that, yes. She was on episode 291 of Get a Grip on Lighting, so if you like this episode, go back and check out that one too. Shelley is on a mission to inspire others to harness the power of the humble light bulb to be healthier, happier, and help to save the planet too. Clients include global lighting and technology brands and regulators, healthcare and educational trust, architects, designers, academic institutions, and museums. A recent social media campaign to raise awareness of the impact of light on teens was translated into three languages and reached over 2.5 million people around the world. She should start marketing for Get a Grip on Lighting. 2.5 million people, holy mackerel. Her TEDx talk was the third most watched in the world in the month following the launch. Wow. We're quite honored to have Shelley James here. But before we go to that interview, Greg, we got to go to ETI Solid State Lighting. That's ETISSL.com.
That's right. You should check them out for their outdoor lighting collection. And when I say collection, I mean collection. They've got a lot of options here. Field adjustable control, 3K, 4K, 5K. They're dedicated to the Dark Sky Initiative, which I know you love.
We
and everybody else should. Multiple mounting options, light where you need it, multiple distribution options, wall packs, floods, canopies, area lights, marine bulkheads even, everything you need, security lights, exterior lighting, ETI.
That's ETISSL.com. Of course, members of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Do you have light bulbs in a warehouse? Do you sell them to people over a counter? Do you sell them on the phone? Do you have a website that you sell them on? Maybe you sell them on Amazon. But you need light bulbs in a warehouse if you want to be a member of Nailed. That's right. Go to NA. Oh, you can join as an associate member if you want. You can join our Lighting Controls Council. We got a couple other things going on. But if you want to be a member, a voting member of Nailed, you have to have light bulbs in a warehouse. Go to NAILD.org. Dr. Shelley James, welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege to be here.
It's our privilege.
So, yeah, it's good to have you again.
And I love what you guys do. I just love what you guys do. I love how informal and energetic you are. It's really fantastic. Really great.
Thank you.
Good to hear. Thanks. Yeah, so it's always fun when somebody comes back is to, first of all, say, well, what's new? What has happened since we last talked? Are light bulbs more healthy than they were before?
A big question. I mean, I always think it's like an apple, you know, it's not the light bulb itself, it's what you do with it. So I'm seeing more and more awareness in different sectors of the potential for light and lighting to shift the way people experience the space and the way they live and the way they, particularly the way they sleep. So I'm seeing more and more interest in darkness as part of the equation. And you mentioned the Dark Sky Initiative. I'm seeing some really interesting work on that, looking at glare control, light pollution, some of those kinds of dimensions of the lit environment, and particularly how that combines with not only a care for agriculture and plants and animals, but also to do with the reduction in waste electricity. So there's some really interesting work on that I'm seeing coming through. I'm also seeing growing awareness, particularly in spaces where people can't go outside. So lots and lots of really powerful work on psychiatric units, dementia care, long-term residential care of all kinds, actually in sheltered housing, where changes in the way that we think about lighting and light is really getting onto the radar, because actually it makes sense financially because people have got lights on anyway. So why not put the right ones in? Mm. So I'm seeing, yeah, growing interest in this sector, which is really exciting to see.
Yeah. Do you have any examples of like a project you can share with specifically what they're doing that you were impressed by?
So for example, I've been working with a big housing association here in the UK, and typically, you know, pretty institutional, pretty uninspiring lighting environments. And the people who live there spend a lot of time really in environments where they just get what they're given. And so working with this housing association, and what we did in one space was simply to improve the quality of lighting in the common spaces, reduce the amount of glare, those horrible bulkheads that you get around the key safe, the way that lighting in the lobbies was handled, just shifting, adding some spotlights on pictures at the ends of the corridors, shifting the, there are some lovely new lights, paint surfaces, which bounce up to 20% more light back into the space, looking at lighting above the community notice board, some of those sorts of things. And what we saw was a transformation in the way that people experienced that common area. They came out more often, they felt safer getting out of a taxi. We lit the trees in the yard, and they kind of suddenly realized that they lived in a space which had a natural world as well. So, I mean, that's one example, which isn't to do with circadian lighting per se, but it's actually just to do with a more thoughtful and creative approach to the space. And now we're working with a community centre, basically, where a space where people, older, particularly older people and younger people on a housing estate go, and how we can make subtle shifts to the lighting outside to show that it's open, a notice board, the and actually that was something similar in the housing association, the sheltered the housing centre, was that very often people who work in those spaces have to have difficult conversations. They're dealing with people with difficult and chaotic lives a lot of the time, and their offices end up being a really grim repository for old bits of brochure, and, you know, they've got an old light bulb hanging from the ceiling. And what we've done there is to really invest in making those spaces feel really professional and comfortable, which didn't cost very much, actually, and seeing that they felt more comfortable pulling people into that room to have a, you know, have a difficult conversation, or to have a different sort of interaction, or to have a Zoom call with potential client or person to rent the space. So we're also looking at combining that with acoustics, and adding color changing luminaires, so that we can you can kind of change one end of the space into a disco or a storytelling room or a reading room, just by shifting the color of a wall wash. And so just those sorts of very kind of.
Are you talking about RGB? Are you talking about RGB? Or are you talking about tunable, like tunable?
So,
Kelvin?
In the main space, we're looking at tunable, and right. In fact, in the corridors of the housing association, with by the lifts and stuff, we simply shifted to we chose luminaires that you could, you know, take the pop the front off and change them from being
selectable.
Cool to warm.
That's
and
selectable, yeah.
Just said, what would you prefer? And they went, oh, well, we like these. So giving people a sense of choice made a big difference to how they experienced that. And then in the community center, basically what we're doing is color changing LED strips, and then tunable in the main space, and then tunable, dim to warm, really, in the office space, just so that there's some coherence in the space, but also some zoning possible.
I have a really, tough question for you. Really tough one, okay? Because this is one I've been grappling with, Greg, for years on here on Get a Grip on Lighting. So what you outlined there is that we know, humans know, that good interior design, which is primarily fundamentally lighting design and paint colors and furniture, but it starts with lighting. Good interior design, or good lighting design, makes people feel better. We know that. Like, people like to be in spaces that are well designed, and the biggest contributor to that is the lighting. So we know that good interior design makes people feel relaxed, or we can change the way they feel. Sometimes you want to make them feel like you want to work, like in a warehouse. You want really bright light, you know, different kinds of lighting for spaces. We know that certain spaces need certain kinds of lighting appropriate to the tasks or how people are using the space, and that that will improve people's morale and whatever. The circadian piece is a little bit more difficult. Okay, the one point that you made there that I think I want to unpack a little bit, Dr. Shelley James, is circadian versus tunable, selectable choice. So to me, circadian is a prescriptive thing. You can't choose which circadian you like. You have to either be under circadian effective lighting, if it's possible. We're not sure 100%. But if you're going to do that, it's this. And then, Greg, how many times have you asked, Greg, what's the exact prescription? And everyone's like, wow, we don't know yet.
They,
right? But circadian and tunable, choosing, making your own choices are like two stars that are colliding right now in the lighting universe, right? You can't have both. You can't let people choose their own lighting and their own colors and their own level of light and make it something that will impact their circadian rhythm. How do we deal with that? Tough question. I told you it was going to be a tough one. I told you.
Yeah, but I mean, you're absolutely right. That is where the rubber hits the road. So what we know is that, let's just begin by what we mean by circadian. Mm. So, and you mentioned, you know, what is the recipe? We can sort of, there's lots of interesting work about what the specific recipe is, but broadly, the way that the non-visual system works is that it needs a hit of bright light. The spectral distribution is now a subject of some conversation because of the way that older people's eyes process light slightly differently. So let's just basically say that you need a bunch of calories in the morning at the same time. And
she's meaning those listening, she's talking about lighting calories, right? That's what you're referring to.
Exactly. Sorry, yeah.
Lighting calories. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Just to explain.
So you basically need a load of light first thing. And we know that actually not only is it the amount of light, but it's the contrast between the amount of light you're getting in the morning and the amount of light you're getting in the evening at night. So really any circadian, but you could get that by walking into work, for example. So there are ways of, so what you're thinking about more and more, what we're looking at, and that's another trend that's coming through, is a kind of personalized exposure to light. So as a human being, you can decide whether you're going to have a big breakfast or, you know, big dinner. You know, there is a way in which, so what we know is that circadian effective lighting, broadly in spaces where people don't have much choice, like residential care, like schools, like other spaces, where people spend most of their lives, if we give them bright, cool lighting in the morning and warmer light in the afternoon, and then ideally darkness at night, that helps them to set their body clocks correctly. That's a no-brainer. When we add daylight, that completely transforms our sense of time passing. So that increases that circadian effect. If you're talking about offices, what we can see is that lighting, which is dynamic, so it changes across the course of the day, seems to improve people's ability to sleep. It's certainly in windows, in spaces with deep plan offices where there is not much access to daylight and other sort of zeitgebers or signals of time passing, that light that runs along in the background that is different in the morning to the afternoon seems to send an important signal to the body clock about time, the passage of time. So running that in the background is one thing. Then to offer zones which is either kind of softer and warmer or brighter and cooler, seems to offer people, particularly if they are, with the increasing diversity of a person and the different types of activity you want, offering people a space where they can go to feel really alert or activated, or a space where actually they just want to be quiet and calm. That's part of the range of things, the sort of buffet that you might have in an office as a space. Mm. The other thing that's interesting is that somebody was talking to me the other day about whether can you have bright, cool lighting to the ceiling and warmer lighting, task lighting. And actually, it seems as though all the research I've read suggests that we don't mind if the lighting to the ceiling is brighter and cooler and you have an element which is down or lower, which is softer and warmer. Our brains that feels normal and natural to us. If you have something which is the other way around, so it's kind of cooler, but you know, warm above and cooler below, that seems to create a kind of dissonance or a kind of incongruity in the system. So
I got so many notes. I got to stop you. Yeah. Cause I got like 100 different things I want to ask you about here. Greg, yeah. Can I just go for a little bit longer here? Okay. All right. Where do I go? Start here. Okay. So what you're saying, if I understand it, is that you're kind of dictating what a space is for with the lighting too, in a sense. And by giving people the choice, they can say this space is now for relaxing or alertness based on what they present. So I got that correct. In terms of light hygiene, You're talking like most people should just go outside for 20 minutes in the morning. That would be the best thing to do. Take your dog for a walk, go outside. But not everybody can do that. Not everyone can do that. And so we need to develop these technologies, because you know for sure that changing, that we know, the things we know is that a big blast in the morning, I'm going to say Kelvin temperature, but I know you, it's a different term, but 5,000 K in the morning, get your 40 minutes and then warm it over the rest of the day. And then the other thing that you said there, which I thought was super interesting, Greg, was that, and I agree with this, the dynamic changing of the color of the light within the spectrum of the sun, of sunlight, you know, mimicking cloud cover and this sort of stuff, and over the course of a day is signaling time changing or something to the human body, which is helping circadian rhythm. Okay, now, here's what I'm going to, what's interesting. You talked about humans. I have a dog, a little Mika. She's a German Shepherd. I live on a farm. So she has free reign of 175 acres, okay? So she can go anywhere she wants. Okay. And my wife's a bit paranoid. So she has this dog tracker thing on her collar. And my dog is number one in time outside in the sunlight and exercise of all the dogs in the area of where I'm at, and like 6,500 globally of this app. Okay. She gets the most time outside in the sunlight and all this sort of stuff. If we can track dogs' exposure to sun, and how important that is, how come we're not doing this for humans? Like, I'm looking at this dog app and it says your dog is outside for an extremely healthy amount of time and getting a lot of steps in and a lot of sunlight and then sleeping at night. Your dog sleeps amazing at night because it's outside all day. But we can't seem to do the same thing for humans. Why? This has to be available for humans.
Well, yeah, it can and it is. I mean, one of the things that app wasn't designed presumably to work out whether your dog was getting a circadian stimulus. It was set up for something else. So that's a byproduct of that. Whereas we've only recently realizing just how important it is for us. I mean, people have got a Fitbit and now we can add something to that, which allows that tracking to happen. In fact, I was reading some really interesting papers today about that. So I'd gladly share some of those papers. They've done some lovely tests on that, particularly for older adults. The other thing is that your dog's got a collar. Great. It's on there all the time. I wear glasses. You guys don't. We find with that there is an issue of where on earth you put it. So there is something like the loose technology button, which is on a collar. I mean, we're trying to get stuff as close to your face, you know, your face or your head as possible. And so there's a team in Switzerland that's created a thing which clips onto your glasses, for example. You know, where does that physically sit on your body in a way that allows it to track the information reliably? You know, if it's in your wrist, you know, you've got your hands in your pockets right now, the exposure from my hands is different to my face. And what we know is that although the skin makes a difference, actually it's your eyes which are the main timekeeper. So those are two reasons. One of them is actually we can do that now. It's simply that most people until very recently didn't realize that it mattered. And the other thing is just the mechanism for measuring that is still quite tricky, just because of where on earth you put it. And only recently has the technology been portable and robust enough for it to fit into something like a button or something that you could fit onto your glasses or wear as an earring or something like that. So the technology in the past, and in fact many studies now still use a kind of a giant light meter, and it's a jolly heavy, you know, it's a heavy old bunch of stuff. The other thing that perhaps is interesting is that if you look at the interface with something like the loose button, the quality of the data, we now know more and more about what bits we need to measure. So you can end up with quite a sort of a not very sophisticated measure of whether the light you're getting is what you need. Particularly then you take it off and you leave it on your bedside table at night and, you know, it's not working that way. So does that answer your question? It's absolutely possible.
It does.
I would say in the next 2 years, that's going to be, along with your Fitbit, it'll add something in there too.
I got two more questions, Greg. I'm hogging Shelley. I know I'm stealing all the time here, but I just have a couple more questions. Number one, have you in your journey in reading studies? I know that you do a lot of research and work on that, and you know, have you come across any artificial or electric light source that can trigger the stimulus of vitamin D production in human beings, the way the sun does through our eyes?
Yes, we're starting to see some of that. What we see, though, is that it's because it's sort of it's potentially quite dangerous. So it's quite hard to work out with looking at some now luminaires which have extended spectrum, the ultraviolet. We're seeing others which go into the infrared. But the dose response isn't yet completely well understood or controlled. So we need to be sure that if you're, interestingly, actually, that we go out into the sun and we just get a full blast of it. And it's kind of part of a balanced set of responses. And we, it gets delivered across the body in a way that we can tell if our skin's getting burning or, you know, you're going red or something. Whereas in an internal artificial environment, the way we're experiencing that light is, it's new and it's unmanaged. And actually, as opposed to you just choosing with your own free will to go outside, which you should, somebody is delivering that light to you. So there's a kind of liability question there, which is still, which is tricky, you know. So that's something that we need to, that's absolutely possible now, but that engages you in a relationship with the building and the building provider that is not yet fully regulated. There was one piece, a company called, I think, Lumenworks in Frankfurt, at Light and Building in Frankfurt. And they had an additional UV module bolted onto the end of a workspace luminaire, which was really beautifully designed. The interface was interesting because as you got closer to it, beyond a certain distance, it would cut out. It stayed on for a certain amount of time. They were looking at that whole sort of liability ethics exposure piece in a way that I thought is probably the future.
It is an experiment. It is an experiment at the end of the day, you know?
It is. It is. I mean, but except that, I mean, we evolved, if we have that mechanism, it's because we evolved, you know, in evolution is our natural experiment. Sure. We know we need it. It's just how the light bulb delivers that, how our artificial environment delivers that. And that's something that is still, we need to negotiate. And as a profession, we need to be kind of clear about what the relationship is and who's in charge of that dose response.
One more question, Greg, then over one more comment and then question and then over to you. So I was reading a book recently that talked about the difference between poor in the global south and poor people in rich Western countries. And the major difference between poor people in the global south and poor people in rich countries is that rich people in rich countries or middle class people in rich countries spend a lot more time outside and poor people spend a lot more time inside. Whereas in the global south, they're outside all the time. But in northern Western countries, poor people tend to spend a lot more time indoors than rich people do. They don't have the vacations. They don't have all this other stuff. So they have reduced levels of vitamin D because they don't go to Mexico at Christmas break like Moneybags Greg Eric does every year.
Nope.
3-5 times a year. No, I'm just joking. Okay. A final question. Scott, the producer, was in a cave. He used to have a cave back there all day. It was dark. He had to turn the lights off all day long. So Scott, the producer of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. So I bought him one of these fake skylights. So it looks exactly like a skylight. Okay. And if you looked into, I can see the producer's office. It looks like there's a skylight in that office from where I'm looking right now. And it feels like it's a skylight. It changes color like a skylight throughout the day. Does that work?
Ask Scott. Does
Scott,
it work?
Scott, he's shaking his head. He says, yes, it works. He loves it. Super expensive. Yeah, but that's that element of lighting design. So if we design our environments to mimic natural daylight, it will have an impact, or will it be a placebo effect? Or I don't know how to describe it, but I want to sell it to people. So everybody on this phone, everybody watching this show, most of them sell this stuff, right? Can we sell on that, hey, you know what? If it actually feels like this, the effect is real. Can we say that?
we can say two things. One of them is that we do know that the middle bit of your brain needs a contrast between bright days and dark nights every single day in order to function correctly. And that's your mood, your metabolism, your long-term physical and mental health, including diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. So one thing you can say is, yes, it works from this, but also that your mental, your experience of a space has a big effect on your mood and a bunch of other stuff too. So the crossover between mind and brain is something that's very hard to unpack it if we ever wanted to. And the placebo is a very powerful effect. And if you believe that you work in a space where somebody cares for you and cares about you and is delivering the kinds of conditions you need to do your job well, and you feel as if you've had a bright day, an interesting day, and then you go home to a softer, warmer evening, and then you're able to close the curtains and actually sleep properly at night, then you'll see a return on investment in that kind in that kind of product approach. Does that make sense?
That totally does. And it was exactly the question I was going to ask. I was going to question the whole idea of the circadian rhythm. I know that scientifically you say you need it, but sometimes you just like the lighting you like. And, you know, if you're going to tell me I need to have this, I might not like it. And then it's going to have the negative effect and be totally opposite.
Agreed. So I think, what we're looking for, in the same way that you're looking for a balanced diet, you know, some people love spicy food, some people can't bear it. You know, it's some people need 10,000 calories because they're working out. Some people need, 500 because actually they're staying. You know, that's not what they need. So, and as we get older, we need more. You guys look like you're people who understand about being fit and healthy. You're not going to force somebody to eat a particular thing if you want them to stick around. I mean, you need to earn people's commute. You need to earn their loyalty. You need to earn their dwell time in your space, whether it be your home or your office or your shop. So there's that layer of respect and choice. And the more we understand about neurodiversity, and that's something else that's a big theme right now, is how different we are and how we respect that difference. We also know, for example, you mentioned people in the south and the north. We know that people who were born or grew up in spaces with really bright light, they tend to prefer brighter light indoors too. So there's a kind of a
you mean lumens or color? Are you talking about Kelvin temperature or lumens or both? Both.
Both. I mean, we tend to find a bright light feels more natural and comfortable if it's cooler color temperature. Surprise, surprise. So if you see a very bright, very yellow light, it looks a bit weird, doesn't it? You see a very bright kind of daylight, 5,000 Kelvin, it feels much more natural. If we see that light coming from above, it feels more natural. Yet if we see it coming from below, it seems a bit weird. So you're dealing with a kind of paradigm of sort of how we expect things to see in nature. So to your question there, what we're saying is that the kinds of light environments, whether you choose to go into snug or sit by the window during the day, is really very much a personal choice and also a question of the kinds of activities you're involved with and who you're involved with. But that in the course of the day, you need to get a certain amount of bright light, and ideally it's in the morning, and in the evening or at night in the dark. But how you organize that exposure during the day is really a choice as an adult who respect, think about kids and people around you. You offer them that choice within a framework. That makes sense.
Very nice. Yeah, totally.
Okay. Wow. Are we ready? I'm going to go back to the sales part of it. So I would love to put on my website, hey, buy this stuff from me. But I'll tell you this. If you look at the history of the lighting industry, I have all sorts of flyers from 40 years ago. Cool green will help your eyes. Full spectrum. Da, 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 all this kind of stuff in the lighting industry. All marketing. It's all marketing. There's no proof. Can we move forward with these, you know, these claims? Are we ready to start setting out these claims correctly and nailed perhaps building a course how to sell lighting that makes people feel better? I'm after here, Greg. If we could have something, are we ready for that, or are we still developing that?
Let me just jump in there, Mike.
Okay,
I think we can do it. Just give people the option to have the light the way they want it. You know, every light needs to be individually dimmed and color changing and all that. And then everybody gets their own freedom as long as they can control it easily.
That's a commodity, you know,
that's
though.
A little messy.
And everyone can do it. I want to sell for a higher price because I know the answer to the question. And Greg is saying the answer to the question is whatever you want. I don't think that's the answer to the question. I don't think that's the answer.
No, but I think there are two dimensions there. One of them is, yes, whatever you want, and that's always going to be an added value proposition. But within let's say you're selling coffee, there's a difference. But yeah, you can have as many cups of coffee as you like, and you can have them hot or whatever. But between a really beautifully sourced, well-made, well-served cup of coffee and something out of a can, out of a machine. They're all called coffee, but they're very different. And so I think that we can start to talk very thoughtfully about the quality of light now and how there are bits of the brain which are spotting differences in the quality of light that that add value. So there's the kind of biological value of things like full spectrum, particularly extended spectrum. So there are some sort of physiological benefits of that, in the same way that there are benefits of cold pressed coffee or one of those sorts of things. We can also say that the quality of interface and control makes a difference too. So you, in a room, thinking about how you balance the light, how the layers of light work together, how you create an integrated story as somebody walks into the room, how that interfaces with not only the color temperature, but also the quality of the optics, where the lights, you know, how much you can control that, and particularly how you control that. So how easy is it for somebody in one end of the room to find a space which feels as though it's calibrated for them compared to somebody else somewhere else? So I think there is a world of control and interface and quality that we know. There's something called two concepts which might be interesting here. One of them is called IEQ, which is the interior environmental quality. And your belief about that IEQ, productivity belief. So the more you believe a space is designed for your productivity, the more productive
you
actually
exactly.
are.
Yes, of course. If you go at a Hotel Excelsior in Cologne, and you sit in the lobby and you're served beautiful drinks, people will report feeling richer. Like they feel like they're more wealthy, right? Like if they go to those spaces, it's very powerful. I don't know how to unpack it all though and make it happen.
But also in the same way, if somebody comes to your home and you say, now, how do you like your coffee? You know, where would you like to sit on a harder chair? Or would you want that nice, low, soft one? You know, where would you like to be? How can I make you comfortable? How can I create a setting where you can either have this conversation about my pension or have a chat about, you know, a future event that we're hosting together? So as a host of a space, I think one of the issues for the lighting sector is that the value chain is so complicated. So the guy who buys the lights from you doesn't necessarily... usually a guy, or the person who buys the lights from you, doesn't necessarily run the space, let alone live in the space or spend their time there. So, let alone be there in 10 years' time when that luminaire packs up and they have to throw the whole thing away as opposed to retrofitting something. So we need and very often they will, as an electrician, I know, you go in there and actually you kind of pick up your tools and you run. You hope you don't hear from them again. And as an industry, we need to think more about how that post-occupancy, that ongoing relationship allows you to add value at different times in the life cycle of the building or the person who's buying it from you.
Oh, we know all about that. We're lighting distributors. Yeah. So we're involved in the built environment and maintaining lighting systems in the built environment every day. Lots of problems there. But I think, you know, what's interesting, and I'm gonna say that, push back a little bit, and I'm going to say, choice can be tyrannical and annoying too. So for example, if you're going to go to a gala and you arrive in your limousine and somebody opens the door for you, you get out of the car with your wife and you take your arm and they take your coats, they hand you a glass of champagne and they walk you right to your seat and you sit down and everything's arranged and perfect and the atmosphere is right and the lighting is right and the music is nice. Someone's playing piano in the corner beautifully. And then the speakers speak for the right amount of time, not too long, not too short. They're funny. These sorts of things can be planned in too for people. So I think there's two avenues. There's the choice avenue, which you don't want to offer people too many choices. You want to give them a certain amount of choice, but not too much. But then also, you should have a base default of elegance. So elegance is not simplicity. Elegance is when something complicated looks simple or looks the way it should from the outside by the people experiencing it. That doesn't mean it's not, it may seem, oh, so this is the way it should be. It feels good. You see, these people are not idiots. Those ones over there are idiots because nothing works the way it's supposed to work. But elegance is actually quite complicated for the organizer, to pull off this kind of thing. So I think what we have to do here is take it back and say lighting is an art, Dr. Shelley James, and a
It
science.
is. It is. Yeah, it is. It is. It absolutely is. And I mean, going to your that lovely example, I can picture you kind of walking out of the limousine, looking all snazzy and scrubbed up. If you had to read the menu, and it wasn't enough light there. So I mean, it depends on everything needs to be set up for the situation, the setting that you're trying to do. And actually, if you got there and you were trying to kind of have a conversation about, a medical issue, it would seem very odd to have set up something like that. So I think it's to do with and a space. What's amazing is that you see a ballroom. I mean, I was at education the other day. The ballroom was suddenly set up as an exhibition hall. It was like, wow. So lighting can shift the atmosphere. So I think that what you can do is to create an environment which can flex to be elegant for so many different situations. And so it's you need somebody who's just sticking stuff in that is to specification, to legal minimum, and that meets the energy regs, is never going to deliver you that seamless elegance, that timeless elegance, and that sustainability that a thoughtful integration of all the options can do, and offering choice within a framework. But I mean, if you've ever been to I was lucky enough to go to a very posh hotel in New York, and I got in, and there was just this kind of these array of buttons. It's like, oh my word! It's like I kept on, hitting all the buttons, and it was every single setting was gorgeous. But honestly, I couldn't once I'd done gone through once, I couldn't remember how to get to the first one, which one was which. So I think that signaling the interface in a way that allows those choices to be meaningful is gives people agency is another really important part of what you and us all as a lighting industry can do, because it helps people to feel empowered in a way that makes it kind of exciting without being daunting.
Greg Eric, good lighting is always contextual. I think that's my takeaway here. It depends. The answer is it depends.
Everything depends.
But I'd like you to go to ETISSL.com. I'm trying to slip these ads in quick so everybody knows. ETI solid state lighting, Greg Eric.
Yeah, we talked about having the light right during the day, but you also need it right at night. Security, safety, things like that. And ETI's got everything for you. Wall packs, canopies, dark sky, committed, all everything you got. Color changing, temp.
Everything. And of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. If you got light bulbs in a warehouse, we're getting sick of saying no to people that don't have light bulbs in a warehouse. You can't join Nailed. You can't be a member of Nailed. Go to NAILD.org. Dr. Shelley James, thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Oh, what a pleasure to see you guys again. Thank you for having me.
No problem. And for all you out there in listener land and viewer land, you're the most important. We love you guys. Bye for now.